Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
Well, it is time to come clean, but before I do that, welcome back. As you know, this show is sponsored by RepublicReview.org. And just so you understand, RepublicReview.org is not a domain that I am planning on populating. RepublicReview.org is the accumulation or amalgamation of the state's efforts. There you go. A combining and mixture of what each of the states are doing so that people can go to a single repository and or a single domain instead of having to go to each website of each state and having it all complicated, focusing on what they are doing in addressing the unconstitutional government we're facing. So if this makes sense, then you understand that I only purchased the domain so that it, one, couldn't be obfuscated by a bad player, but more importantly, to guarantee that that space exists when the states start coming together, because I truly believe that they will be coming together, and sooner, thank you, Mr. Biden, because I believe the impetus, I believe the motivation is going to become overwhelming to for people to realize, one, they have to act, and that we have to act in preserving our Constitution. As you know, you're listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and the history of what we have, where we've been, where we're going, and this is the only show that gives you the academic-based evidence of what we have to do. Our comment line is 425-270-5416. We want to have the dialogue. We believe you're a part of the dialogue. We want to make sure that you have a mechanism that you can call, not necessarily during the show, but when you are ready to articulate and formulate your idea or your question or your concern or maybe just a comment. Anyway, 425-270-5416. That's the number you call in. We want to actually thank you for listening. We appreciate the growth, and we know more and more people are listening. But what we need you to do is to actually put it out. So it's self-serving. It definitely comes off. Anytime somebody comes along and says, hey, listen to me or read my book, it is self-serving. This is one of the reasons why I don't plug my book. I do plug this show because I do believe that as people listen and they start listening, either this is something that triggers them as going, wow, this is information we need to know. Or they go, well, this has nothing to do with the news cycle. So if you're consumed by the news cycle and got to know what's going to happen, well, I'm going to tell you, nothing is going to happen until we take action. And so this is where it is paramount that you actually break away from the news cycle. And we actually prove this on this show. But there are those who will listen and go, oh, well, they're not talking about, you know, what happened today. There's too many things that the beast is doing that we cannot focus. Our focus is killing the beast, not on what one of their little tentacles is doing and squeezing or killing babies. I mean, there is all sorts of deplorable, despicable things that are being done at the hands of government. And it's all unconstitutional. This is why we got to focus on what the Constitution permits, and then we can start demanding that we get compliance to our Constitution. So this is why we ask you to help other people understand, hey, you've got a problem with the news cycle. What you need to do is you need to understand what we have to do to actually get the government into compliance. It solves all of our problems. Those things that are happening in the news go away. Pretty soon, the only thing that they'll have on the news was, you know, are we going to get enough rain this year for the wheat crops in Kansas? That's a good sign. When all of a sudden, the only thing that the news cycle can give us is, you know, these mundane things of weather, babies being born, you know, people getting married, you know, then that's a good day. That's a really good day when we get government out of doing all of these horrific things that they have no power to do in the first place. Let's stop the news cycle. Let's stop the carnage. And the only way to do that is to learn and understand, one, Republic Review, what the framers gave us. And basically, this is what this show and the content of the show. So you're not going to be able to eat the elephant in one sitting. This is an endurance thing. You must endure to the end type of thing, right? So what we have to do is we have to help grow this show so more and more people start consuming and understanding that the news cycle is our enemy. That what we have to do is we have to understand that the Constitution is our friend. And the Constitution and the good Lord gave us everything we need within this Constitution to win this war. Anyway, so I'm hoping that you can consider, you know, helping explain this to your like-minded friends. We want to, and the reason I take this time almost every show to kind of go through this is so that I can give you a different perspective each time to help grow the message of this show. There's nobody. As a matter of fact, this is one of the reasons why more and more constitutional supporters are actually getting on board with this because, one, it's irrefutable. And it's not irrefutable because of GR. It's irrefutable because of James Madison and Thomas Jefferson and our framers. I'm not giving you really much intellectual property other than the fact of being able to discover, provide the analysis and so forth. I mean, GR is not the genius here. GR is just the messenger. And just like every other messenger, they all have their problems, you know? The print is too fine, you don't like the font, what have you. Whatever the message is, look at the message itself, not the messenger, right? This is why one organization likes to actually, you know, highlight my failings, you know, in not being clear in my first book, and they were concerned, and this is how I complain about them a lot, so I won't mention their names, but this is how they try to attack the idea of Republic Review. Instead of actually refuting Republic Review and Thomas Jefferson and James Madison's words, what they do is they say, well, he's not the best articulator. His book was hard to read and it was very confusing. I mean, that's the kind of crap I get from those guys. Anyway, those people, actually, because they're men and women. Anyway, let me move forward. What we're going to be doing in this show is we're going to go straight into break, and then I'm going to play the audio clip that I'm forwarding off to Montana. I did my best. I mean, I may need to re-edit it, but the context is there. You're going to hear the script, and this script is the argument against the Convention of States. And we're going to, in this show, we're going to dive into the two sides. Actually, there's three sides, right? There's the conventionites, the anti-conventionites, and then those who have not chosen to decide what side they're going to be on. And those are the people we're really trying to reach. And we're trying to convert the conventionites and the anti-conventionites to abandon their positions to actually unite on the Constitution. So as we do that, we will probably do that after I give that little dissertation. It's about 20 minutes long, and so you will find that we will have, I will say, ample time to kind of cover some of the things that are the background of this. But I want to give, in this show, in today's show, I want it to be all about the Convention of States, or not to Convention of States, to be or not to be type of thing. And so with that, let me just kind of build up one of these little things that, you know, we have to recognize is, and I've been saying this, we're in a Bolshevik revolution, right? We have to decide what we're going to do. Are we really going to take the time and go into a convention to consider amendments when the Constitution has already been buried so much and obscured so much that by the time the convention leaves, the Bolshevik Revolution will be over and the carnage will be done? We don't have the time to fiddle around, folks. We actually have to get our, you know, our head down and start plowing forward and literally start pushing our objective to actually become successful. So anyway, so let me just do this. As I've basically defined the two sides, there are the conventionites and the anti-conventionites, and those of you who have not gotten involved. And even though you may be the one person that might be able to, you know, come up with a really good response, we want you to have the understanding that what this whole matter is about is it's about the Constitution. Is there a deficiency with the Constitution? Does the federal government have enough power to do what they need to do within the Constitution? Or do we need to give them more powers? Do we want them to actually have powers over domestic matters? Madison was clear. The federal government was not to have any powers over domestic matters. They were supposed to be facing outwards. They were supposed to be looking at foreign affairs, national security, and those types of things. And that is a central government that governs best in doing those things. We don't want them to dictate how to run our schools. The last thing you want is the guy with the rifles and the bullets to be in your schools telling your kids what they have to do. You know, we want freedom in school. And this is why schools became, the term academic freedom and academia actually came from the religious education system that we have now perverted because we have changed it from the Christianity, the Judeo base, Islamic base, or what have you, and we've moved education into godlessness, which is in itself a religious faction. Anyway, we're going to come back from the break. You're going to hear the diatribe or the testimony to the Montana state legislators, and then I will close on comments regarding the convention state. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back after this. I believe our republic is in the throes of a Bolshevik revolution. Those who I believe are patriots that are confused in what to do. I believe the Convention of States is filled with patriots who want to take action in trying to save our republic. I believe that there are patriots in the anti-Convention of States argument who are looking to maintain the course and not do anything due to their fears of a constitutional convention. Even more so, I believe every citizen is obligated to support the Constitution and to take action when the Constitution is being threatened. And even more importantly, public servants are legally obligated to support the Constitution. I am here to challenge the problem we're facing, and more importantly, what is being proposed as the solution. The problem is that the general government is not complying to the Constitution and outright violating the Constitution. With that, let me place context to the problem and the real solution to this problem. First and foremost, Madison asserted the only reasons for an amendment to the Constitution was to fix a deficiency with the Constitution, provide a new role, responsibility, or power to the general government, take away a role, responsibility, or power from the government, or to make wholesale changes to the Constitution. Based on the current circumstances of this Bolshevik revolution, our problem is not the Constitution, but the general government's failure to comply with the Constitution. For those who do not understand, there are two types of constitutions. One is a constitution that delegates general powers. This is called a general constitution. And these general powers are delegated to the government, leaving to the government their discretion on how they choose to govern. The other type of constitution is a specified or enumerated constitution. An enumerated constitution delegates specific powers, and only those powers and how they are defined in the Constitution are the only powers the government possesses jurisdiction over and can govern. This, an enumerated constitution, is the constitution that has been bestowed upon this republic by a very, by a very aware and a very concerned state governments, as well as framers, who just came from a government that possessed general powers and exercised tyranny upon them. Now, let me provide historical evidence as to how the general government tried to usurp one of many powers not delegated. As a point in fact, Madison on the 3rd of May, or the 3rd of March, 1817, and Monroe on the 4th of May, 1822, and Andrew Jackson on the 27th of May, 1830, all independently vetoed Congress's attempts to usurp unconstitutional powers to create the foundation for a Department of Transportation. Each of these presidents stated that Congress must amend the Constitution to constitutionally delegate this power to the government because it did not exist within the Constitution. With this fact, then where are the amendments for the Departments of Interior, Justice, Agriculture, Commerce, Labor, Health and Human Services, Housing and Urban Development, Transportation, Energy, Education, Veterans Affairs, and Homeland Security? Because clearly, none of these departments are within the enumerated powers of the Constitution. Clearly, no amendment from either Congress or an Article 5 convention can address these violations to the Constitution. The money being spent on unconstitutional government, as well as the voluminous tyranny the states and people are suffering from, must be the state's primary concern, not an Article 5 convention or any new amendment proposed for that matter. History proves amendments are equally violated, just as the Constitution is being violated. In 1794, the states demanded to constrain the federal courts further to restrict federal courts from taking jurisdiction of suits of individuals against the state as a response to the Supreme Court's decision of Chisholm v. Georgia in 1793 to protect state sovereignty. To date, this amendment has been violated by SCOTUS and Congress in violating this, claiming that the bankruptcy clause in the Constitution abrogates this. However, the point in fact is that the intent of an amendment is to abrogate the antecedents within the Constitution, not the reverse. Congress also claims that the 14th Amendment gives Congress the power in Section 5. However, this only gives Congress the power to make necessary laws pertaining to the 14th Amendment, not previous amendments. There is no language in the congressional debates of the 14th Amendment that supports their assertion. If the general government has not only ignored the Constitution, but has worked to ignore and violate an amendment such as the 11th Amendment to the Constitution, which was debated to clearly extend protection of the states and guarantee state sovereignty, then how arrogant are those proponents to an Article 5 convention to believe that their amendments will not be ignored and violated as well? Historical evidence proves when the general government violates the Constitution, the action must focus on addressing the violation and not to consider an amendment to the Constitution or go into a federal court where the general government possesses no jurisdiction over the matter. Thomas Jefferson and James Madison in 1798 clearly did not ask for an Article 5 convention when the general government violated the Constitution with the Alien and Sedition Acts. And I want to point out that Mr. Biden, our new president, is already going down the path of repeating by going after anybody who espouses the Constitution as a domestic terrorist and calling that a crime. Clearly, he's revisiting what John Adams and Congress did in 1798. Nor did Jefferson and Madison try to sue the federal government in court in 1798 and 9. The following is exactly what Thomas Jefferson and James Madison in 1798 did when the general government violated the Constitution. First, Jefferson in 1798 resolutions, or the Kentucky resolutions, audited the Constitution and pointed out all the violations of these acts against the Constitution. He then called upon the states that a committee of conference and correspondence be appointed to communicate with each other to prepare to respond to the general government. Madison, in the Virginia resolutions, informed the states that the, quote, the states who are parties thereto have the right and are duty bound to interpose for arresting the progress of the evil and for maintaining within their respective limits the authorities' rights and liberties appertaining to them. He also stated that the General Assembly of Virginia doth solemnly appeal to the like dispositions of other states in confidence that they will concur with this Commonwealth in declaring, as it does hereby declare, that the acts aforesaid are unconstitutional, and that the necessary and proper measures will be taken by each state for cooperating with this state in maintaining the authorities, rights, and liberties referred to the states respectively or to the people, close quote. Both Kentucky and Virginia successfully nullified the application of these laws in their states, but in no way did Jefferson and Madison consider this a success at all. This is why Jefferson lamented in the Kentucky Resolutions of 1799, when other states failed to fulfill their obligation in protecting their states and citizens from federal tyranny, stating, quote, we cannot, however, lament that in the discussion of those interesting subjects by sundry of the legislatures of our sister states, unfounded suggestions and uncandid insinuations derogatory of the true character and principle of the good people of this Commonwealth have been substituted in place of fair reasoning and sound judgment. Madison went much further in his 1800 notes on the Virginia Resolution, stating, quote, where resort can be had to no tribunal superior to the authority of the parties themselves must be the rightful judges in the last resort, whether the bargain made had been pursued or violated. The Constitution of the United States was formed by the sanction of the states given by each in its sovereign capacity. It adds to the stability and the dignity as well as to the authority of the Constitution that it rests upon this legitimate and solid foundation. The states then being the parties to the constitutional compact and in their sovereign capacity, it follows of necessity that there can be no tribunal like the Supreme Court above their authority to decide in the last resort whether the compact be made by them be violated, and consequently that as the parties to it, they must themselves decide in the last resort such questions as may be sufficient magnitude to require their interposition. Now, I did add a couple of words there, but moving on. Because their fellow states failed to do their job in 1798 and 1799, Madison and Jefferson did not give up or surrender to unconstitutional government. Instead, they pulled off a political coup, unseating John Adams from a second term as president. They also unseated many Federalists in congressional and legislative seats, swinging Congress and the states towards liberty. They did this all in less than 2 years. The fact of the matter is, we don't have a Jefferson and Madison today. Analysis provides this. The Republic's priority and primary focus must be to constitutionally force the general government into compliance to the Constitution. The supporters of the Convention of States are either being disingenuous or outright deceptive to not inform the states how the states have amended the Constitution with amendments and not point out how even the amendments are being violated by the general government. Anyone who asserts that Madison and Jefferson were only out to nullify the Alien and Sedition Acts is either lying or does not possess the capacity of using their reading and comprehensive skills to analyze what they stated and they acted to determine what they were really going to do in 1798-9. Today, America does not possess, as I have said, a Thomas Jefferson and a James Madison to lead America and to save us from all of this federal tyranny. Today, if the states choose to waste the finite time we have left by playing with an Article 5 convention and do not act and assert their authority over the Constitution in the exact same manner as Jefferson and Madison pointed out, this republic is as good as dead. So what should the states do? They need to assert their authority over the Constitution as Jefferson and Madison pointed out. The states need to do exactly what Jefferson and Madison did, and that process today is what is referred to as Republic Review. Republic Review is precisely what Jefferson and Madison set out to do to enforce compliance to the Constitution. Republic Review is not a pathway for an Article 5 convention of states and recommends that no amendments be considered by the states until the general government is operating in compliance to the Constitution. Republic Review requires states with active petitions for an Article 5 convention to formally rescind their petition to send a clear message that what the general government must do is to fully comply with the U.S. Constitution. Does the state possess the power to conduct an audit of the Constitution and execute the process for Republic Review? Absolutely. Again, this is what Jefferson and Madison did in 1798 and 9. And Article 7 of the Constitution identifies the states as the principal parties and sovereigns to this compact. This is why they were the ones that ratified it. It wasn't up to the Supreme Court, the President, or Congress. Article 5 supports this by only allowing the states the sacred sovereignty over the Constitution as to being the final arbiters as to what is constitutional and what is not constitutional. The 10th Amendment clearly points out that the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution or prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Ergo, the power to audit the Constitution for violations is not a delegated power to the federal government. Clearly, this power is reserved to the states. During the Virginia ratification debates, again, Madison stated, the powers of the federal government are enumerated. It can only operate in certain cases. It has legislative powers on defined and limited objects beyond which it cannot extend its jurisdiction. This means that the jurisdiction over powers not delegated to the general government are reserved to the states collectively and independently. The power, again, to conduct an audit is inherent in the primary parties in a compact and in accordance with the fundamental tenets to contract law. Back then, it was this way, and even today, it is this way. It is a standard in contract law. As cited above by James Madison, the Constitution of the United States was formed by the sanction of the states, given by each in its sovereign capacity. The states then, being the parties to the constitutional compact, and in their sovereign capacity, it follows of necessity that there can be no tribunal, such as the Supreme Court, above their authority to decide in the last resort whether the compact made by them be violated. This is why wasting time on a convention, this is why wasting time on a convention of states is just that, a waste of time. Madison also stated that where the last resort can be had, no tribunal superior to the authority of the parties themselves must be the rightful judges in the last resort whether the bargain made has been pursued or violated. Now, let's consider the questions not asked by the states so far, which are first, the cost. In 1787, the states were responsible for paying the costs of the convention since they were the ones requesting the convention. The same applies in this case. The states are requesting this convention, so it must be presumed that the states have to bear the financial burden. How much cost does the COS estimate for the venue and travel and delegated compensation on a daily, weekly, and or monthly basis? Because the more people you send, the more it's going to cost. Since time is money, how long does the Convention of States expect the convention to last? It has been said that there is no plan, that there has to be this discussion on the Constitution and what they aim to do. In other words, it sure is seeming like this Constitutional Convention is going to be a perpetual convention, thus a perpetual burden to the state's budget. Can you afford to waste not just your money, but the time in the middle of this Bolshevik revolution on considering maybe there's a deficiency with the Constitution, or maybe that you want to delegate more powers to the federal government, or maybe you want to take away powers? I think not. And more importantly, I do not believe that it is wise to open up a convention to possibly rewrite the Constitution. Let's deal with the problem we're facing. The problem we're facing is compliance to the Constitution, plain and simple. So with that, I conclude my comments on this, that it is painfully obvious that we have been wasting our time debating the merits of amending the Constitution when first and foremost the problem is not the Constitution. Nor are any proposed amendments silver bullets to force the federal government into compliance. Instead, we need to focus on learning what Jefferson and Madison did and invite the primary proponent of Republic Review here to this body to provide us all the facts on Republic Review instead of wasting any more time on trifling with the Constitution as if it is the problem. This concludes my testimony, and I thank you for the opportunity to bear witness to you what the real problem is and what we really need to be doing. Thank you so much. And so with that, that is going to be going out to Montana. Excuse me. There'll be a few minor edits, but, you know, such as the excuse me and clear my throat, because I can probably edit those things out. I'm not planning on doing any major inserts or anything like that, because I think it stands as a comprehensive argument, because the argument isn't whether the states need to apply and go into a convention. That's the furthest thing from what we're facing. That is not the direction nor the solution. So anyway, what I didn't get a chance to say, and I want to kind of put this in context for those of you who might be Harrys or those friends of yours who might be Harry. Remember the premise, reasonable people equally informed seldom disagree. And so these Harrys that we know that are kind of liberal and we can argue and they can think objectively, the problem is that middle part. We're not equally informed. This is why in the listener drive, we want you to actually reach out to those Harrys, to your friends who may not be very educated on the Constitution. And to me, my friends, that is really the problem. Constitutional illiteracy really points to the reason why we've allowed government to get so far out of the boundaries of the Constitution. Let me just move on. The matter is really one of patriotism. When we look at people taking action, we really shouldn't criticize them for their action, but what we should be doing is pointing out that their action is not addressing the real problem, especially in the status quo side as well as the Convention of States side. Anybody who is arguing that we can't do the Convention of States, we have to stay the course, are you kidding me? There is a real problem, and we must interpose as Madison called for. We've got to get involved, as Madison and Jefferson demanded in 1798. So just sitting here doing nothing, and I think anybody who's looking at this, should I do this or should I do it? Anybody that recognizes that we have a problem, all we've got to do is back, just take a step back, take a deep breath, and look, do we really need to amend the Constitution? Yeah, don't buy into term limits. A public servant cannot violate the Constitution. So why do we care about term limits? We impose term limits. We will never have a James Madison ever serve this country again. We will never have a John Quincy Adams serve this country again. What we'll have is we'll have a revolving door, and we will not have government, especially at the state level, starting to actually lead us. You got to look at term limits. The process of term limits, as Madison pointed out, is to vote them out when they no longer serve you. Bottom line, if they are violating the Constitution, they don't deserve your vote. So let's start forcing the Constitution before we even really want to consider term limits for any type of position. I might be able to say, you know, the treasurer, you know, that should be a term limit position for a county. The, you know, auditor, that should be a, because they're not leading. They just have a job that's been delegated to them, and I can get that. But when it comes to legislation and leading and the dynamics of problems, like the problem we're facing with this biological warfare and how we need to be acting, boy, you term limit out the guy that actually can come up with the solution, and then you're just, what are you doing? You're coming up with a status quo, and it's all violating the Constitution in the first place. If you have people, if you have somebody in your state, in your community, that understands the Constitution and has read the ratification debates and embraces those definitions and terms that have been provided in those ratification debates, because that there is truly somebody that understands the terms and definitions and embraces those completely, then this is where we're going to start all agreeing. Because as the Constitution was defined, that's how we must move forward in operating our government, period. This is why I argue and I disagree with lots of people who have never read the ratification debates, and then they want to tell me how the, you know, how we're supposed to do this or supposed to do that. I'm sorry. I am absolutely sorry. As we move forward, we have to start looking at the patriots and so forth. And one of the things that I have said time and time again, a patriot for centuries has been one who ardently supports their country. The framers did not want Americans and public servants to blindly follow politicians or an unlawful government. This is why we are to only support the Constitution and not, you know, President Trump, not President Bush, not President Obama, or your governor, or this person or that person. We are to support those who are supporting the Constitution and proving to us that they are. I mean, I love the fact that Rand Paul tries to, you know, cite the Constitution, and Ron Paul tried to cite the framers. He was wrong in many ways. Because when Rand Paul and Ron Paul started saying that, you know, we were a passive government, no. He doesn't understand the framers, because just remember, James Monroe was a framer and he gave us the Monroe Doctrine. Now, is the Monroe Doctrine a passive government? Is that a passive policy for government? Or was only George Washington the framer? And to be clear, George Washington was only the president of the convention, and George Washington relied on Madison heavily in the first term of his presidency. And then with the falling out because of the split between Jefferson and Hamilton, Washington started, you know, going to Hamilton for his advice. But at that point in time, Washington had already kind of come to his conclusions. Most people think that Washington's farewell address was written by Hamilton. I submit to you that Hamilton would not have written that as a farewell address, because Hamilton was a nefarious person who believed in implied powers and the federal government should grow. And when anybody reads Washington's farewell and how he clings to the concept that let us not just assume powers or usurp powers, let us do this via this process of amendment that is in the mode within the Constitution, that right there is Madison. But anyway, I digress. When we come back, we'll try to wrap up this positioning on these convention and conventionites and anti-conventionites. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so as we move forward with the commentary, as I was just laying out, the framers really didn't want Americans, and especially their public servants, to blindly follow a party, to blindly follow a person, you know, like George Washington. And as a matter of fact, this was the patriotic duty of Thomas Jefferson and all citizens to stand up against John Adams in violating the Constitution. Let's be honest here. You can't just get away with violating the Constitution and not have ramifications. True patriots come forward, and true patriots actually serve the Constitution and support it against enemies both foreign and domestic. So what we are supposed to do, if we're going to be true patriots, we have to understand the Constitution, what its terms and definitions were as they were ratified, because those are the terms and definitions, and only those terms and definitions are what matter, not how the Supreme Court wants to interpret. It's one thing if there happens to be no definitions and terms within the ratification debates, but it is another thing for a pompous man or woman in a black robe to say, well, we believe and we see emanations from penumbras, or however they want to lead us down their agenda. This is why I believe we have to revamp our legal system and the court system that judges must cite when they're making a ruling and they're trying to say that this is in the Constitution or not. They have to cite the ratification debates and how those things were defined when they talk about the militia or when they talk about martial law. If they can't, because we need to look at the judges as academic leaders on the Constitution and its real terms and definitions as provided during the ratification debates. That's what they should be doing. They should be guarding the Constitution as defined, not how they see it. And they have aggrandized themselves to be the oracles of what they think is constitutional, not in how it was defined. So this is why it is important to understand as the people, so that we can hold these nefarious or pernicious people, maybe pernicious people because it's a double P, that sounds a little better, these pernicious people in office or in public positions who are using their agenda and their views to dictate to us how we are to be governed. This is unacceptable. So a patriot does not support a party. A patriot does not support a person such as Scalia. Even Scalia got it wrong, because in some of the aspects that he was taught, he never read the ratification debates. I've yet to see any judge or jurist site ratification debates and make decisions based upon how the Constitution was truly defined. Why is this? Because it takes away their latitude. You know, John Jay was a Supreme Court jurist. I believe he was the Chief Justice when they called upon him to leave the Supreme Court to go and work a treaty with Spain. And he failed miserably. But when they came back and said, you know what? As he dusted off, the dirt and the beatings that he took and his bruises healed. One of the things I believe was John Adams, that offered him a seat on the Supreme Court again. And instead of Marshall, if I remember correctly, but nevertheless, when they asked him to join the Supreme Court, what ended up happening? He said, no. I see the Supreme Court is really a dead-end job. You know, our job is to basically determine how the Constitution was defined. There was no artistic license to start injecting agendas. They were a very passive role. They were the guardians of the Constitution as it was defined, as Hamilton and Madison stated. Hamilton maybe stated that in one way to sell the Constitution, then he undermined that afterwards. But bottom line, as the Constitution was sold, that's how all of the framers framed the Constitution. Too many people have been blindly asserting that we must be silent with our party or our politicians as they vet themselves in the public forum. This has to end. The measure of government and the measure of politicians is the Constitution. And this is why the uniparty, or I should say the two major parties, the Democrat and the Republican parties, are the problem. They have a laissez-faire design. They don't even hold their public servants who wear their brand accountable to the Constitution. Well, they're politicians. They're supposed to be able to do whatever they need to. This concept of politics as an art of compromise is wrong. There is no compromising our rights. There is no compromising the written law. The Constitution is the supreme law of the land, and there's no compromising it. Every time they have done that, it has been to our detriment. This is why we must insist and defend the Constitution and insist these public servants actually support the Constitution per their oath of office or face removal. It is that simple, my friends. If you are at the point that you can see this and what the problem really is, then you have to come to the conclusion that you have to abandon all these things that are unconstitutional. There is no way you're going to get the Republican Party to take a stand on the Constitution and hold those who wear their brand, those who wear that label Republican, to the Constitution and demand that they fulfill their oath of office. There are people within the Republican Party that want to do that. But the Republican Party, the RNC, will not do that because they want the compromises to work forward because the people behind the curtain are really the ones in control. And that's not how our government is supposed to run. But ever since the parties took control of America in the 1870s, this is when the globalists really seized their power. And they slowly moved us. They had to, slowly convince people that, yeah, this is constitutional. Yeah, we can do this. Yeah, we can. And they rewrote education to a point where if you look at what you learned about civics and the Constitution a long time ago in the 60s, 50s, or the 70s or 80s, compared to what they are learning today, it is a crime against our government. It is treasonous that we are teaching children that the government can do whatever it wants and not teaching the truth of the Constitution. This is how I believe we are going to have the opportunity in the Constitution Party. Those who want to stand on the truth, I just want to say this, those who want to stand on the truth will actually attract the kids because inherent within children is this desire to revolt. And if your parents are wrong and they're embracing wrong, or let's just call wrong evil, and you know, whether it is the evil of, you know, debauchery and immorality, or whether it is the evil of compromise of politics and compromising the Constitution, these children of today can be taught and we can use that inherent genetic design in a child that wants to rebel against their parents and rebel against the wrongs and the ills of society, just like they did in the 50s and the 60s and the counterculture. Now we can actually use that to turn this country back and turn the direction of this country towards the Constitution and compliance, because now these kids can learn what the truth is and go and tell their parents, you're wrong. You don't understand the Constitution. And they would be right. And this is what emboldens kids. Giving them the truth and giving them the light of the truth helps shine the light on where we are and where we need to go. And this is how they can actually lead us out of the woods. I want you to understand that there are way too many people that have just embraced this laissez-faire party policy. But this is why people need to objectively look at the damage that you were doing by blindly embracing and following the siren song. I've been telling you that the Constitution Party is where true patriots must go into a line. The Constitution needs to be clarified, or I should say the Constitution Party platform. Let me be clear. The Constitution Party platform needs to be clarified, and it needs to be simplified. It needs to be pointing to the truths of the Constitution. And I believe those truths are what I just covered in that diatribe, that our Constitution is enumerated, not general, that the federal government only has these powers. And it's the same thing with our state constitutions, that they are enumerated. If we have any general powers that are delegated to any state government, it needs to be removed and needs to be revised to specified and enumerated powers. In so doing, we hold government's hands, you know, to those things within the instrument, the Constitution itself, and obligate them to only be able to do those things. Anything outside of that, any compromise outside of that, is unacceptable. If we hold people accountable, you know, as I've said, I've said this before, that in the company I worked with, we did a huge, and this was with, you know, a lot of people, almost a million employees worldwide. And when we asked the employees, what is one of the things that they just, you know, don't like or they want to see change? Almost all of them agreed. It was a high preponderance of, as one of the number one outcomes coming out of this poll, was that the people, the employees, wanted to see employees held accountable for their bad behavior. Because when a leader or manager fails to hold somebody accountable, it just wreaks havoc on the morale, and it wreaks havoc on the culture you're trying to develop. We need to hold people accountable. And this Constitution Party needs to hold those who wear their label accountable. Their bylaws must change so that they can say, if you violate your oath of office and it's not supporting the Constitution, you're gone. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.